This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Clothing and other items from centuries past can tell us a lot about our history. Organizations like the La Crosse County Historical Society work to preserve these items and provide the cultural context to help us understand our predecessors of the Coulee region. And now local officials are considering a new museum to help display these artifacts and celebrate the city's history. Joining us to talk about current and proposed efforts to preserve area history are City of La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot and Peggy Derrick, Executive Director and Curator of the La Crosse County Historical Society. Peggy, I wonder if you can start by talking about, you know, what are the biggest needs of the Historical Society in a possibly new museum?
Our needs break down into three areas. One is collection storage, exhibition space, galleries, and the third is programming area, places for visitors to come for events, for classes, you know. So you have the stuff and you have the people. You want to be able to put them together in appropriate ways for the people to learn from the stuff, by which I mean the artifacts, and where you store those artifacts when they're not actually in use. Did that make three? I think so.
And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, why those things are not achievable or maybe not ideal in your current location?
Sure. First of all, I think very few museums and even more smaller historical societies have ideal conditions. It's always about continuous improvement and doing your best. And I was not involved in the move to West Avenue. It has produced some improvements. It really has. Collection storage, while it still has problems, is better than it was, and I'm proud of that fact. But as far as the exhibit space, we don't really have good public gallery space there. The building is not handicapped accessible. It has many different levels inside it, so that making it handicapped accessible would be very difficult, very expensive, and not very successful. There are places you're just not going to get stairways to. It also doesn't have enough floor space for good exhibits or for public programming.
Mayor Cabot, where did this idea come from to look into a new museum for the Historical Society?
Well, I know, at least in my conversations with people, it's been something that's been talked about for quite a number of years. And especially as we started to have this current conversation, I heard from people who offered their interest and their perspectives about just what this should be, because of the fact that people in the past had talked about that. Really, this idea, as Peggy was saying, of having a place where you could have the exhibits, the programming, really that engagement with the community, and to do that in such a way that's inspiring, that tells our story, and that's a tourism and a visitor draw. Because I know a lot of people, when they travel, or when I just know myself personally, when I go other places, I want to know more about the history of the people in that particular place. So I think it's something that's been discussed over a number of years, and I really feel with all of the development, with all of the things that are happening in our community and really our larger region, now is the time to make progress on moving this forward.
Can you explain a little bit more about what you mean by that? Why now is a good time to work on this project?
Well, I think in a couple areas. I mean, number one, under Peggy's leadership, I really am impressed with the Historical Society's programming, the types of educational things that they're doing with our community, you know, celebrating really the rich diversity of all the people, from the Native people to the people who live here today, and as well as the specials to celebrate our history, the things that they do through social media, through the artifacts that they focus on every week in the newspaper. I mean, all those kinds of things, I think, really put together tell an incredible story about La Crosse and our history and just what that has meant. And so I think that's one piece. The other piece to me is that our history is, and really how we celebrate, how we promote that history has led to the successes that we see as a community. Our historic downtown being a great example of how we've utilized history to help us further develop and grow as a region. And I see this as a time right now with everything that's happening. I think people could argue that we're going through kind of a boom period here with all of the building and just the, new jobs, new businesses, the growth, that now's really a good time to be doing that because I think you're seizing on some of that momentum. So I think those are really the two areas, just, what the Historical Society has been able to achieve and then really this opportunity to kind of seize the moment.
Peggy, can you talk a little bit about some of the growth and some of the things that the Historical Society has been working on in the last 5-10 years that Mayor Cabot's, talking about behind this push?
Well, I'm actually really gratified to hear him say that he thinks we're doing a lot to be more inclusive of all different cultural and ethnic groups throughout history in our area, because I feel like this is an area that we are just barely beginning to touch. It's a huge goal of mine, and making the contacts with these communities is something I've really been working on, but I think we have a lot more to do in that area. And hopefully the new museum will have space for that, for exhibits that encompass lots of different groups. These last few years, since we moved to West Avenue, there was a feeling that, okay, we got ourselves here, now what are we going to do? And kind of the reality of it. I kind of liken it to like when a teenager leaves home and figures out, wow, I've got to pay the rent and the utilities and all this other stuff, and figuring all that out, staying within budget at the same time that we just really put our heads down and worked hard at improving programming with the resources we had. So that was kind of the inspiration for the Things That Matter article in the newspaper. We don't have a space to have rotating exhibits about different themes, but we can share collections in different ways. We share them online, and I know that we have a lot of followers who are not big internet users, but they still read the newspaper. And it has been really gratifying to see how popular that article is. I would not have dreamed that we would still be doing it. And now we have no intention of stopping. So as long as they'll let us publish it, we will. We've also got, a year ago, we received a grant from the La Crosse Community Foundation. So I need to do a shout out to them and thank them. With their help, we hired a collections manager who has started the online database. So you can go on our website and look at artifacts and look at information about things that are in our collection. We've had an exhibit in collaboration with the UWL History Class and the Pump House Regional Arts Center. So just because I don't have a gallery, it doesn't mean we don't have exhibits. We find other spaces to do them in. And that exhibit was actually called Artifact, Where History Meets Art. And it featured 15 artifacts from our collection that were paired with new art pieces that inspired them, made by local artists. I thought that was a great, really inventive way to display them.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about present and future efforts to preserve the La Crosse area's history. We are here with Peggy Derrick from the La Crosse County Historical Society and La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot. Peggy, you mentioned, your online collection, and I want to take a moment to talk about this effort because I think it's a really interesting intersection of these historical artifacts, but, utilizing new technologies to make mm-hmm. them more available. I mean, and where did that idea kind of come from to really focus your efforts on this online collection?
It's not a new idea in the museum world. All the big museums now have online collections. I realize as we've gotten into creating ours and I look at them with a more critical eye, some are more successful than others. It's all about that interface with the public. It has to be easily searchable. It has to have appealing photographs. And you know, some local public interest to it. The really cool thing about it, everybody from local high school students working on National History Day projects to researchers on the other side of the world can go on the internet and look at our artifacts. We've had a query, we've been helping a researcher in Australia researching history of the Vietnam War, looking at some of our uniforms and asking for more information. So it just opens up possibilities. Historians love it because they can do so much research without traveling. And then they can focus on where they need to go, you know, if they want to go visit artifacts. And I, you know, I'm really hoping that we have National History Day students who find artifacts in our online database that relate to whatever subject they're creating a report on. And if they contact me, I would love to have them come, make an appointment, get the objects out, and let them examine them and see them.
Mayor Cabot, I wonder if you can give us a bit of an update on where the city is at in establishing this task force to look at creating a new museum or a new space for the Historical Society.
Sure. The Common Council approved the legislation this month here in January, which authorizes the formation of the task force. It talks about having up to 10 people serve, as well as identifying the possibility of having advisors to be there as well. So the next step is to make those appointments to the task force, and the mayor traditionally makes those appointments for confirmation by the Common Council. I'm hopeful and expecting for that to happen at the February Council meeting. And then I would think not too, shortly after that, it would be time for that group to start meeting. And, the expectation, of course, is that it's going to take 6 to 9 months to gather the information, to engage the community, to really come up with recommendations for then what's next and the work that has to be done after that. So the challenging thing for me, of course, is that I have way more than 10 folks that have expressed interest and more than 10 groups that have expressed interest in serving on the task force. So we'll be doing hopefully a delicate but good job of balancing and making sure that we have broad representation from as many people, as many groups as possible, so that we can really have a good conversation through this process.
Peggy, who do you hope is part of this conversation? You know, who do you feel like needs to be at the table?
I liked what Jason Gilman said the first time we met. And he said, it isn't time for the big money people. It's time for the people with big ideas. It doesn't mean they can't also have big money, but the big ideas is what we need right now. And people who, they don't need to have museum background, but they need to love lacrosse. And they need to feel really committed to doing this for their community. That's what I would hope for.
Yeah, Mayor Cabot, what has been the community response to this idea? Have you heard from people, you know, outside the realms of people who are really passionate about historic preservation, about what they think about it?
I've really gotten a sense of excitement on the part of the public and people that I have, talked to and run into at events and in other places. I think there's, again, this recognition that we have such an incredible history here, and we need a place that really a facility that does that justice and can, bring the collections and the exhibits and programming all together in one place, and to have that be part of the draw for people to want to come to lacrosse or to do, to see the latest exhibit and the things that are being programmed. So I get a sense from folks that they really are interested and would like to just see this move forward, because it's amazing to me, just again from the prehistory and Native peoples all the way up through today, and all the groups in between, the immigrant groups and refugee groups, and just the natural beauty and resources that we have here. It's pretty remarkable. It seems like we're touching and talking about and engaging in history with almost just about every project that we do. today? I mean, you're talking about either downtown developments or neighborhood revitalization. I mean, there's a story to tell and with each one of those, and I think people are just generally excited about this going forward.
Peggy, can you talk about, what are the kind of current availability of, seeing these sorts of artifacts and museum spaces in La Crosse? I know there's the Hickson House and there's a Riverside Museum. Can you talk about kind of what's currently available?
Both of those belong to the Historical Society. The historic Hickson House has been our museum since 1965 when the Hicksons donated it to us with its original furnishings inside. So it is a very, very cool thing that La Crosse is lucky to have. Riverside Museum is in a city-owned building, but the artifacts, it's a collaborative, really. Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center has a display in there, and so do we. Really fabulous artifacts, theirs and ours. I mean, hundreds of things that were brought up from the War Eagle, the steamboat that sunk at dock just a few hundred feet away, really, on the Black River, are on display there. There are old Ho-Chunk artifacts. There are things about the logging, stories that tell the log history of logging in La Crosse, which is really what made this city grow and made it start. And also the pearl button industry. One of the things I like best is one case that has a surveyor's compass that was used by early surveyors. It was literally used to measure out this town. So that's the Riverside.
Yeah. What is the, how popular are these locations? I don't know if you know how many visitors you get or where you pull visitors from.
Hickson House sees over 4,000 visitors a year, which may not sound like a lot, but it's really only open from Memorial Day through Labor Day. Last year, for the first time, we were open on weekends in the fall through September and October because it's pretty busy with tourism at that time. Most of our visitors to Hickson House are from out of town. Here I am on the radio. You guys, come see the Hickson House. It's right here in your yard, and it's incredible. And we have great docents to give you tours and tell you the stories. We get locals for the holiday tours who come to see the house decorated for Christmas. It's beautiful all the time, and it has great stories to tell about La Crosse, the growth of La Crosse, the development of interior decorating in La Crosse and how it was used. So that's the visitors for Hickson House. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember how many Riverside has. I want to say it's easily 3 to 4 times. Riverside is located in Riverside Park. It's in the Explore La Crosse Visitor Center. So many thousands of people walk in that building. And, it has its following, but it's really kind of a simple, old-fashioned museum, not a lot of extra visuals or graphics. And we've always felt constrained about spending money on it, to be frank. We don't have any commitment that we can be there in the future, so writing grants to redesign exhibits is not a possibility. And there's always rumors of what's going to happen to the building in Riverside. And we start to plan, and then we don't. But in the meantime, this little museum just keeps sitting there, bringing people in, and a lot of them really, really enjoy it. There's something to be said for an understated museum that lets visitors discover things for themselves, really. It's been a good lesson for me seeing that happen.
Mayor Cabot, I mean, based on, the response to these other museum spaces we have in La Crosse, is there enough tourism to make a new museum a viable option for our city?
Well, I believe that there is, just based on the growth in tourism that we've witnessed just in the last several years alone. When you're talking about the hotel stays and expenditures during or from visitors, we've seen growth in that over the last several years, especially, so that we're one of the top 10 counties in Wisconsin when you look at all of that together. So I believe there is, but one of the big questions that the task force is going to be charged with is to look at a kind of a model of what this facility would look like and how it would function, and to make sure that it's being set up or that there's recommendations for its long-term feasibility. Because the last thing we'd want to do, obviously, is come up with grand plans and then not be able to either build it or not to maintain it and sustain it over the long haul. That's really the key part. So part of what the advisors and this task force and the staff are going to do is look at other examples from around the country, I would think, to see where there has been kind of that perfect combination of what Peggy was saying, something that is going to be affordable, to be sustainable, but also to help with all of the great artifacts and displays that we have here locally.
That's La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot here with us today to talk about a proposal for a new regional history museum and how it fits in with other local historic preservation efforts. Also joining us is Peggy Derrick from the La Crosse County Historical Society. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, we're talking about how the task force is going to be looking at, kind of the feasibility of this new museum. But, I wonder, Mayor Cabot, is there a concern that how relevant, I guess, museums are to tourism in the future? I mean, is a museum kind of an outdated idea, I wonder?
Well, I think that's the challenge for historical societies and museums going forward, is to be able to maintain that relevance and to push, push people forward when it comes to understanding history and some of the things that Peggy had mentioned earlier, those connections to our education and the arts and everything else. So it's really, again, I feel fully confident that the staff, the historic society that we have knows that very question. And I, just for one quick example, when I was traveling to Friedberg, Germany, as a part of our sister city exchange a couple years ago, they have a wonderful, again, local museum as a part of their town, and they've done things interactively with technology and some of the things that Peggy was mentioning that keeps it relevant, so that there's always something going on, there's always something sort of new and fresh. And it makes it kind of gets maybe in people's minds that it's, oh well, this is something to go do and to check out because of the program or the educational part. So I do think that is a kind of just a larger challenge with museums, is to maintain that and to keep growing. But I'm fully confident here with the history that we have, with all of the resources. So it's not just the Historical Society, but it's groups like the Mississippi Valley Archaeological Center and the other just great groups that are working so hard every day to maintain our history, to celebrate that history, and I think that's the way forward.
Peggy, what are your thoughts are on the future of museum spaces? I mean, is this going to continue to be a tourism activity, I wonder?
The tourism part is so important, but unless they're going to Disney World, what tourists really respond to is authenticity. And this is only going to be authentic if if La Crosse creates something for themselves and use it themselves and care about it. And I think tourism responds to that. And then you get more financial support, so it can be a positive thing. But we need to do it for ourselves first. I think I'm going to have to repeat that a lot in the next few months. It needs to be not for the tourists. It needs to be for the people of La Crosse. And if they support it, it should work.
I've seen you quoted as saying that this museum is not just something to show La Crosse to the outside world, that it's something for La Crosse to do for itself.
Yes, exactly. That's what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Why is that important for our community?
Because it builds a sense of belonging and identity that sort of goes backward and forward in time. It connects us to peoples who have lived here in the past and makes them more alive. It makes us feel more rooted to where we are. And in a sense, that makes you a bigger part of the larger world as well.
Peggy Derrick, Executive Director and Curator of the La Crosse County Historical Society, is here with us today to talk about a newly approved task force to consider the creation of a local history museum. Also joining us is Mayor Tim Cabot. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the museum proposal and other efforts to preserve local history. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about a newly approved task force to consider creating a La Crosse Area History Museum. Current spaces used by the La Crosse County Historical Society aren't enough to preserve and showcase the organization's collection of clothing and artifacts from centuries past. Joining us to talk about the proposal for a new museum are City of La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot, Peggy Derrick, Executive Director and Curator of the La Crosse County Historical Society, and Barbara Koyman, History Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, an architectural historian. So we've been talking about this new museum proposal, but, you know, Barbara, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, how this kind of fits in with other historic preservation efforts we've seen in the La Crosse area.
Well, I think it would be really interesting and wonderful to see the La Crosse County Historical Society take on an existing building and retrofit it and rehab it for their purposes. And I know that's something that they are already looking into. A new building can be wonderful, but reusing some of the built environment that we already have is it's like the ultimate in recycling. And usually those older buildings are built well. They may need work, but certainly building a new building would take a lot of effort and money. And by reusing an existing building, I think that they would continue to be giving that positive nod towards our history. Maybe could even incorporate the history of that building into their education and efforts that they move forward with. And I believe there's some potential out there within our city for that.
You've been involved in a lot of different efforts to preserve historic buildings in our community. I wonder if you can talk about, maybe some of the biggest victories of preserving historic buildings and maybe some buildings that we've lost in our history that have lost part of La Crosse's history.
Sure. You know what? I think I like to focus on the victories. One of the most positive things that, at least in recent years, that has helped with historic preservation and saving historic buildings has been the state and federal historic tax credits. And in just very recent years, we've seen some really wonderful examples of how the tax credits have been used here in our community. The Charmont is, you know, sort of the one that we all hold up the highest, because here that building had been used but probably underused for a long time. It started out as a candy factory. It was Ross of La Crosse for decades, and now it's this wonderful showcase boutique hotel in our downtown, and they would not have been able to do that without those historic tax credits. And the interesting and wonderful thing about the tax credits is that the property has to be listed on the National Register of Historic Places, but from there, then the developer needs to improve that building, maintaining the things that make it historic, that you would look at it and go, yes, that's a historic building. They can't completely change it into something else that looks modern or different. They have to maintain those historic features. And the court above Main on Main Street, where the wedding tree is, is. That, again, is another one of our historic tax credit successes. The I'm going to get the name wrong. The lofts. What had originally been the Gunn Brewery Stables on South Avenue. On both sides of South Avenue, they're just south of Gunderson. Both of those buildings that have been part of the historic Gunn Brewery have now been turned into apartments. And again, both of those projects, two different developers used historic tax credits. I believe Roosevelt School as well on the north side is another very successful adaptive reuse of a school using tax credits. So we're seeing some pretty significant large buildings being redeveloped in the city and reused. And every time that happens, those buildings are not getting torn down. They're not getting thrown into their debris thrown into the landfill. And so that's very positive. Plus, that money is spent locally. We see local developers oftentimes, or at least regional, and then we see the products and the workers are working locally and coming in locally. So, again, we're not seeing some big company from out east or whatever constructing a new building in our city. We're reusing what we have.
Yeah, Mayor Cabot, what do you think the community response to the number of historic buildings that have been preserved and added to some of these registers, you know, what has the community response been to that?
Well, it's been, again, very positive, and I would argue that the focus on the adaptive reuse, the historic preservation has helped us and has led us to what we witness today with just all of the growth and the new businesses, new housing, the vitality that's going on all over our community and the buildings that Barbara mentioned. I mean, those are all just such phenomenal projects. They're not always the easiest to get done because there are, when it comes to the financing and maybe some of the other complexities, it becomes a little more challenging, but I think they are all very strong testaments to how important people here view and treat their history and these buildings, because I just think we have a mindset now where it's like, well, you know, how do we make something out of this building and how do we fix it and how do we bring it back to its former glory versus, you know, maybe in years or in decades past, those buildings were not treasured the way that they should have been and they were unfortunately demolished or, you know, changed so significantly. So I think history, again, I really believe it. It's one of those things that helps to drive a place, and places like our downtown and some of our commercial districts are successful because we have paid close attention to the history and have really tried to not, you know, kind of artificially recreate it, but have really tried to pay respects and do it the right way. And those tax credits, I would agree totally. Without the tax credits, we would not see the growth and development that we've been witnessing these last several years, especially.
Barbara, what would you say to people who maybe question if adding a building to a historic, you know, register and you know, kind of creating these standards for future renovations? I could see some people saying, well, that could prevent progress or prevent that building from being updated. I mean, is that a risk?
No, there's some misconceptions with the National Register program. Somebody could get their building listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and that just in and of itself gives no restrictions. That person could literally turn around and tear that building down the next day. Or do whatever they want to. It's their property. Where the tax credits come in, because it's a program that gives benefits back to that property owner, because of its historic status, yes, there are rules that developer needs to follow in maintaining the historic integrity of that building. But that's a benefit that developer or homeowner or whoever it is getting because of that historic status. But there's nothing that requires that property owner to use the historic tax credits. They could choose to ignore them and then again do what they want to with their building. So really, there should be no impediment to development in terms of the future of a building. You can simply not take advantage of the tax credits and do what you want. including demolition. Now, let me put a caveat in there. That's the National Register Program. It's a national program through the Department of the Interior. And we also, at our local level, have a local City of La Crosse Historic Preservation Ordinance. That ordinance sets up a different set of rules. And so, for example, a property might be listed on the National Register but not listed as a local landmark. The reverse might be true. A property that's not listed on the National Register might be listed as a local landmark. And if that local landmark property, if a new owner comes along and says, oh, I don't like this, I want to tear it down, if it's listed as a local landmark, there's something in our ordinance that actually tells that property owner that they are not able to get a demolition permit. So they're not able to demolish. There's appeal processes. They can take it to the city council ask to have that historic designation repealed, and then they could move forward because then it's no longer considered historic. So there are ways around it, but people get the programs confused, and it's all the time. Even people who seemingly know a lot about historic preservation get them mixed up. Not trying to further confuse your audience, but just that they need to understand what program under which that they're moving forward with their historic designation or not, their renovation or not.
That's Barbara Koyman, local architectural historian, here with us today to talk about a proposal for a new regional history museum and how it fits in with other local historic preservation efforts. Also joining us are La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot and Peggy Derrick from the La Crosse County Historical Society. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And so, Peggy, as this task force starts to come together to look at, looking at a history museum for the La Crosse area, I wonder if there are examples of local history museums in this region or in the state that you think would be really good examples to look to as we kind of form an idea for La Crosse.
There are more than I am aware of, I'm sure, but there are some that I would hope we would do field trips to for people to familiarize themselves with things you might do and with things that you know you don't want to do. I mean, they can work both ways. You can see examples of what isn't going to work or what you don't like. The Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah is one that I would visit or recommend for a visit. The Chippewa Valley History Museum in Eau Claire is another one. And one thing about people in museums is they tend to be very generous and happy to accommodate visitors and share, give behind-the-scenes tours to talk about how they accomplished what they did. And so I look forward to doing that.
I wonder what your thoughts are on this idea of using a historic building in the La Crosse area or looking at a new building. Is that something that you, Peggy, have given any thought to?
I'm open to both of them. I don't believe it's going to be my decision, hopefully. I don't foresee that we're going to make the Peggy Derrick Museum here. and it's the task force will develop a sort of, a list of what they think should be in the new museum. And that they do that before they even look at location, because they need to know what it that they plan to do, that they dream of making, what its needs are. They will have criteria. I would be open to either one. I start with the criteria of what we need, like handicapped accessibility, parking. What does collection storage need, which can be quite specialized. Environmental controls for humidity and temperature are very important and very hard to achieve, frankly. And that is actually one of my goals from this project. If this succeeds and we do create a new destination museum in La Crosse, I don't see the Historical Society moving again anytime soon. I don't see us creating new collection storage anytime soon. I think this is maybe my one chance to see this collection stored the way that it should be stored to preserve it for the future. So whether that be new construction or old construction is not as important to me as that it fulfills the needs that we have. I think either one could be fun, could be beautiful. So,
Mayor Cabot, have you given any thought to, which way the task force might be headed towards considering?
I have not. I think, again, I'm really most interested in this group, and that's why you do these processes as well, is you get a group to have conversations, because I really believe that the right idea, the right location is out there, and through the conversations, through the planning process, through these relationships, my hope is that the right spot, comes out and comes forward front and center. So I don't have a preference either. I think, again, there's enough historic building stock. There's enough, I think just interest in this where we're going to, my hope is that we're going to come up with the right thing that's going to work for La Crosse going forward. I do think the one, maybe particular personal interest in my mind is that connection to the Mississippi River and just how important the river has, what that's meant for why Native people lived here, why the European folks settled here. Some connection to that river, I think, is something that I look forward to, but there's, I know there's a lot of creativity out there to try to come up with ways to do that, and I look forward to that.
I know the task force has been allocated $10,000 for administrative
Correct.
Costs and any studies that might need to come out of this. And, but I wonder what a museum project like this could cost. I mean, is this going to be, I guess, a significant part of the budget if we do move forward on this?
Well, I think that's also part of the task force's charge is to look at something that is sustainable. Building things, even though those can be challenging at times, is not as not as difficult as making sure you're doing something that can be maintained over the long haul. So the operating costs and expenses and all that. So I think I would expect, just knowing a little bit about the collections, about the resources that we have, yes, you're going to be looking at a fairly expensive project, but I know, just all the partnerships and the interest in this, I have no doubt in my mind that we can, if this is a community priority, it'll get done. The big thing, I think, for the task force is really to look at the different models and the different partners of, how do you make sure that this thing can be sustained for the long haul? Because I think that's really important. The collections that Peggy was talking about, I think, those deserve to have a proper place for, forever as a part of our history.
Peggy, can you give some examples of, what storage challenges you currently have and what is really needed to make sure these artifacts, are preserved?
The environmental challenges are the first ones I would mention, that things neither freeze nor bake, that they are at a stable temperature on the cool side but not frozen, and that humidity is controlled and very low, not dried out, but like 40-45% relative humidity. From the point of view of myself and all the wonderful volunteers and my collections manager, I think it would be fantastic if we had collection storage that was accessible by elevator and not just by stairs. We carried a lot of things out of one basement and carried them down into another basement. And, we carried them out sometimes because they didn't fit in the elevator in the other building. It was very small. So usually museums have a freight elevator if they have things stored other than at ground level. There's more than one way to work it out. But easy access that's safe for the artifacts and safe for the people who work with it would be important for me.
Can you talk a little bit about why preserving artifacts from the past is important? We talked earlier about how the Historical Society is working on this photo collection, this online collection. But why is actually having the artifact important?
People live in a material world, and those materials evolve and change over time. The clothing we are wearing now is far different from what was worn 100 years ago because the fibers were different, because of the Industrial Revolution, because of technology changing. And a photograph cannot show you, even a color photograph cannot really show you what the object itself can show you. Feeling it, touching it, smelling it, examining it closely, being in the same room with an object is different than looking at a photo of it.
Barbara, I would pose the same question to you because I think that they're very similar. And, you know, why is a photo of a historic building not the same as preserving that building and using it?
Well, I think, again, most people are very nostalgic by nature. You know, you remember where you grew up. You remember your neighborhood. You remember, you know, playing with other kids, as you know, and summer nights, and your neighbor's house, your house, your grandparents' house, the place where your dad worked, the department store where you got your Christmas gifts. And I think that for a lot of people, even though, let's say, the Dorflinger building, you know, people remember the Christmas displays and going into the basement and seeing the toy department or having tea in the mezzanine. But they can still go into that building, and it's still functioning as a retail store. But people get a sense of nostalgia when they go in there. And I think that that keeps not only people who grew up in a community bound to it in a way emotionally and invest in it, then not only emotionally but financially and spiritually and all of those things. But I think that also it gives people who did not grow up in the community a sense of history too, to understand or listen to other people's stories and get a sense of why they think it's important. I give a lot of historic walking tours in the downtown, and both in the spring and the fall, and I get a lot of local people, people who grew up here, people older than me, and a lot of times I'll say that my tours are looking up tours, because we all see everything at that storefront level, but do we really look up? Do we see the cornice or the fancy windows or the you know, the weather vane on top of the building? And so I'll point out some of these things, and they'll go, I've lived here my whole life, and I never saw that, and that is so cool, and thank you for sharing that. So, and I didn't grow up here. I've lived here a long time, but I did not grow up in the city. So I think that just even the fact that people still come to these walking tours or go to the museum or, you know, go online and go to Facebook pages that talk about, you know, what is it important about La Crosse? And it brings up big discussions. One of the biggest discussions on a Facebook page, a La Crosse Facebook page that I belong to, is whenever anyone posts a picture of one of the bubblers. Oh, my gosh, you'll get hundreds of comments. Oh, I remember the bubbler that was next to Hogan School. We used to drink out of that or on my walks home from school or, you know, and they'll tell stories about their connection to the bubblers and how bubbler is a Wisconsin word. And yeah. And there's something as simple as a cast iron bubbler on the corner of a street intersection brings up really emotional feelings for people. And it's that connection to the past that where that emotion comes from.
Mayor Cabot, as we're wrapping up our conversation here, you know, it sounds like this is going to be a history museum with a lot more than just the city of La Crosse's history. And so I wonder, you know, how what the plan is to incorporate other partners like the county or regional partners.
Yeah, we're hoping to be able to do that through representatives, for example, from the Historical Society, which is the La Crosse County Historical Society. I think that's one of the challenges, again, with having a somewhat smaller group, 10 people. They're they might be asked to wear multiple hats to be able to represent various groups and various interests, because we do have, you know, whether you're talking about the Franciscan sisters and their history here, or, you know, as mentioned earlier, the logging and the sawmills and the brewery and beer brewing traditions. I mean, all of those are things that are very vital to our community, and we'll be doing our utmost to try to represent the broader region, because I do think that these things extend beyond the region. And, you know, whether you're talking, again, the native peoples that were here, the agriculture, the things like the logging and all that, I mean, those have a pretty far reach, and we're going to do our best to have those conversations with as much of the community and the much of the larger region that we can.
We've been talking with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot, Barbara Koyman, architectural historian, and Peggy Derrick, Executive Director of the La Crosse County Historical Society, about a proposed La Crosse Area History Museum to better preserve and showcase artifacts from the region's past. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.